up.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All righty, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. Yes, it is a throwback Thursday, and we'll talk about these dates in Super Bowl history later on in this hour. We'll also have the good, the bad, and the dumb. Yeah, we're continuing to look at this Super Bowl from all different ways and different angles and different fun. You know, we talked about Jimmy Garoppolo still being able to throw the ball, even though you didn't see it in the postseason. Talked about the Niners' defense against the pass and how good it actually is, and maybe problems for Patrick Mahomes because it's the best he's ever going to face lead at all at any point this season. But you know what? There's also sort of things about Andy Reid and also Kyle Shanahan. These two guys, these two offensive-minded guys that could create scenarios that can lead their team from under different circumstances, whether it is a situation where the Chiefs fall behind early, like big, like they did against the Texans, where you just need some sort of ability and stability among the offense to sort of put points on the board and get back into a game. Or when Kyle Shanahan reads what you're doing and then says, you know what, I got different things that can counter that, right? If I have to limit my quarterback in throwing the ball because you can't stop what we're doing against a run, I will do that, but I will also be able to be creative in plays that will force us out of third and long situations. But when talking to Jason Cole last hour, one of the things that I really liked, the way he emphasized, you're also, as much as we talk about Mahomes and Garoppolo and the defenses for both teams and the coaches for both teams, this is a great matchup of tight ends. This is a great matchup of two guys who are very intelligent in the way they play their position, in George Kittle and Travis Kelce. And I think that is also something that you need to watch out for in this Super Bowl. I don't think either defensive coordinators are going to be able to control or neutralize either one of these guys. And what role does each of them have in the win that's coming for one of these teams, I think is going to be a story that's going to be written about afterwards, Sunday night into Monday morning. Is George Kittle and Travis Kelce and the importance of the tight end position for both offenses. But like Jason Cole had mentioned, Steve Spagnuolo came up with a great defensive game plan against Tom Brady in the Super Bowl, and he may have to do it to sort of limit the rushing attack of the 49ers and at least try to make them off of this balanced attack that they've had, or at least one-dimensional attack in terms of running the ball. A lot of really cool angles to this game on Sunday.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM, 1971 on a Throwback Thursday. Chicago, where are these? This has been a great day of music, Mr. Culver. My goodness.
Who would have thunk it?
God, 1971, what a year. John Wooden and the UCLA Bruins began their 88-game win streak on this date, beating Santa Barbara, and they would not lose again until 1974. So we're celebrating that. We will have the Super Bowl date in history that is coming up also in this hour, as well as the good, the bad, and the dumb. You know, I was, whenever we do Throwback Thursday, I always like to, you know, talk about the event that we're kind of celebrating. And UCLA starting off at this 88-game win streak sort of reminded me of the greatness of John Wooden. One of the things that I always liked when his former players would talk about him is, you know, when you're in radio, you know, you try to develop a style where if you curse every day doing things, like no matter what you try on the radio you can't, so you try to develop your vocabulary in a way that you don't, right? But you know, I've met so many people in my life that are on-air talents that, man, like curse like sailors when the microphone's not on and then are able to control it when the microphones are off. John Wooden cursed at no point. At no point. Like, no one ever heard him say a bad word. But you know what they did hear him say? Goodness gracious sakes alive. And that was the thing that if he said that, that was as bad to his players as if they were cursing him out with every single word in the bad dictionary. If you heard Goodness Gracious, Sakes Alive by John Wooden, that meant it was really bad. That was as bad as it was going to get for John Wooden. That's like, I love stories like that. I love stories like that. I just think this pyramid of success has changed a lot of minds about different things. His sayings have been fantastic. And his successful 88-game win streak, again, what UCLA is not only the championships, but one of the things they're known for, began on this date in 71.
No, it used to be cool. Before we repainted the hallways here, there used to be little posters of a lot of John Wooden quotes.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I knew I worked with a guy who had the pyramid of success on his wall, on the back of his desk. So every time we'd go in there and talk about things and whatever we were doing, you'd always look up and right behind him would be the pyramid of success. So I just thought that was pretty cool. No. So again, John Wooden on a throwback Thursday. So Dusty Baker has now been hired by the Astros. A one-year deal with an option for a second. 70 years old. We talked about this yesterday. They were really narrowing their focus on Dusty Baker. They had interviewed a number of other candidates, but Dusty Baker was their guy. Now, listen, I've been reading about this because I really wanted to get a reason why, right? Like, to me, it doesn't, 70-year-old manager, he's got a kind of a mediocre record overall. He was let go by the Nationals because he couldn't get the Nationals further in the postseason. They kept going to the playoffs, and then it would be an exit. The only thing that I'm coming up with from people who really know Baker and really know what the Astros are needing is this balance of the Astros are going to be a humiliated team when they go around the American League schedule and the interleague schedule next year. They're going to get booed. The players might get thrown at, and what they're looking for is a veteran voice, a guy that's been around baseball for a long, long, long time. This is a guy, Dusty Baker, that played with Henry Aaron to sort of help those players through that. If that's what you're looking for with this Astros talent, then you're looking for the wrong reason. If your only reason for hiring Dusty Baker with this incredibly talented team that they're still going to have is, well, he'll be able to help them make the transition from the scandal into the season where they're going to be pretty much a pariah. Is that what they were looking for? Because what I would be looking for if I was Jeff Crane, what I would still be looking for is a guy that can win the World Series. Because I still have a baseball team that can win the World Series, right? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. The cheating scandal is the cheating scandal. But isn't that Astros team still loaded regardless of the cheating scandal? I mean, wouldn't you say that the talent on that team is still capable of winning a World Series without the buzzers, without the trash cans? I mean, I know someone will say, well, we're not really sure, Tony. We're not, how deep does this go into the success of these players? These are incredibly talented ball players. This is a loaded team. I know Garrett Cole is gone, but this is still a very good baseball team. Don't you want a guy that is capable of taking you to the World Series? And I'm not saying Dusty Baker can't, because he might. But I am also pointing out that this is a guy that doesn't have a lot of World Series success. His team blew a 6-run lead in 2002 to the Angels. Right, like I just mentioned, he got let go from the Nationals because he couldn't get a talented team there going on. If I'm Crane, don't I want a guy that's like, all right, I'm keeping this shit moving. Pariah or not, scandal or not, I still have a chance to win a title. And more importantly, I still have a chance to win a title that's not going to be tarnished by this, no matter whatever tarnish it puts on my 2017 season. I can't imagine that this is being celebrated amongst the Astros fans. This seems like a very safe hire of a veteran voice, but I don't think it is a guy that takes you, that continues on what AJ Hinch was building on. Oh, these are almost two different guys.
No, it's very much taking a step back from what AJ was building.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, it's a complete 180. It's just the mindset of the organization right now. Basically, I mean, they're bringing in a guy who they know is a baseball guy who's going to keep the game clean. And I think that's what I'm blanking on the owner's name right now.
Jim Crane.
Jim Crane.
Yep. I said Jeff Crane. I meant, yeah. I got him confused with Lou now, but Jim Crane.
I think that's what Jim Crane is wanting. He's just wanting a blank slate right now.
Maybe so.
And just bring in just a baseball guy.
And listen, I always say with coaching hires, I've criticized plenty in my career, but I also don't know what goes on in the interview process, how blown away you can be by a candidacy. Like, you know, maybe Baker comes up is literally on top of what I just mentioned, where he says, look, I understand who you have on this team, and I understand what you guys have been built here, and I plan to not miss a beat. I'm not messing with the success of what we've done. I'm not dramatically going to change stuff. It's not going to be, you know, a complete redo of, I mean, I'm going to keep this ship moving. You got a talented team that should win the division again, that should be in the playoffs again. And, you know, I'm going to make sure I play it right. And then maybe he said all the right things to convince Crane that he was the guy, but it just, you're right. It's safe. And listen, I know accountability is a big deal. When you come off a scandal, and I don't care what it is, accountability is a big deal. It is not only winning the trust over of your fan base, but it's also winning everybody else around you, right? It's also making sure that the organization as a whole, and I think this is why Crane had to get rid of Hinch and Luhnow in the first place, is that the organization as a whole is not forever tarred with this, but just briefly tarred with this, because you're still going to be playing baseball as the Houston Astros for a very, very, very long time. And you don't want that sort of reputation. And maybe Dusty Baker is the guy that comes in and gives you the accountability enough in the first year to make sort of the sting of this go away from people. Like, well, that Astros team is gone. That Astros, the people in the organization that were really behind that are no longer there. And Baker might be able to let this team shine without the scandal over. I guess that's what you, maybe that's what you're looking for first. But as we talk about in sports, the window of opportunity is not huge to capitalize on what you put together in terms of championship. I don't care what sport you're in, right? If you, even in baseball, where you can get a group of young talent, keep them, sign them to deals, maximize that level of talent to be competitive in a World Series pursuit, you take advantage of it. If all Baker has been hired for is accountability and not necessarily his inability to take this team to a championship, I think we've got the wrong angle to look at Dusty Baker. I hope the angle is also that he's not only going to bring accountability, but he can do some good things with this lineup, because they need a manager that can do a lot of good things with this lineup, because they should still be competitive for a World Series. Gerrit Cole or no Gerrit Cole, I don't care. Right? I mean, that's the way I'm looking at it. I mean, if you just want to hire a 70-year-old guy that everybody loves around Major League Baseball, great, you did that. But can he also continue on with what this team actually can do, post-scandal?
Say they have a decent year, they make the playoffs, right? I mean, he'll probably be given the option,
sure,
to come back next year. But say the one thing I was thinking about is if he has just a mediocre year, and maybe it's because they're a wild card team, they lose in the first round. Do you keep him around a second year just because he is so close to 2,000 wins as a manager?
Yeah.
It's one of the thoughts, yeah, that was going through my head. Was like, true. Oh, my God. You got to.
That's true. Good point.
You got to let him get the record, right?
Yeah, good. Good point. You always come up with those. I like those.
He's not on this planet much too long.
he's 70.
He's 70. He's lived a life.
God, man. You know, these baseball guys, man, it's impressive, isn't it? When they go, like, he's 70, he's still in the game, and he spent, like, you know, 52 years of his, yeah, life in major league, in some sort of major league base, from minor leagues all the way up. He spent, like, 52 years or 50 years of his life in some sort of professional baseball capacity.
I mean, didn't they have to drag Tommy Lasorda out of Dodger Stadium?
Oh, God, yeah. Zimmer, the same thing. Zimmer been around for an eternity.
They weren't even on payroll. They always remind me of Milton from Office Space.
Yeah, like, right?
He's not even collecting a paycheck. He just keeps showing up.
Showing up wanting that stapler, man. Just crazy. It's a long time to be part of something. Putting on those uniforms as either a manager or a bench coach. It's impressive.
All right,
it is impressive.
Not to dive down that rabbit hole, but is that the dumbest thing in all of sports?
Yeah. What do they need manager uniforms for? Why do they have to dress like the players? You know?
I won't remember the team, but my son played against a little league team, and the coach on the other team, full uniform.
Oh, good God.
And this is like U11. 11 oh my God. And I'm like, oh, no, you can't do that.
No, you can't
do that. You can wear a T-shirt. That's fine. You can wear the shirt of the team name. All sure, the coaches and the hat. Do that.
Yeah.
And wear the hat. But he went full uni.
That's
talking
awful.
Like, you know, socks, pants were coming up to his knees.
It's all in.
Like, nah, that's not right.
Remember when Mike Nolan, really good defensive coordinator, but he had a period of time, I think he was coach of the Niners. He wore a shirt and tie. He wore like a suit. Because his dad did it. Like his dad was a coach in the league and he wore it. I always thought that was a great look for a football coach. Like that Tom Landry look. I always liked that. I was never a fan of the hoodie. I always thought that sleek shirt and tie jacket look. I don't know. That's a little old school because it goes back to like Landry and those guys.
Well, like
I always thought that
NBA.
Was a nice look. Yeah.
NBA,
oh, yeah. They wear nice suits.
They come out in a suit.
Are you kidding? I always said, like, listen, if I was an NBA coach, or even if I was a college coach, I don't care how much it would cost me, even if I was like a brand new coach, I'd buy the greatest suits you could buy off the shelf. Like Rick Pitino had that joke about how he has Armani and his son, Rick Pitino, the one who coaches Minnesota, had Joseph A. Bank. I would spend all of my initial salary, much to my wife's chagrin, on the best Armani suits I could find. I would look that slick if I was a coach in college basketball. Because, you know, you got to have that kind of reputation. I always liked that look. I thought it was cool. All right, coming up, this date in Super Bowl history, and there are three of them to go through on SB Nation AM. Let me tell you something, girl, I've been trying to say now. You
it's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thank O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. 1971, Throwback Thursday, the UCLA win streak began on this date. 49 years ago? We do the math right? All right, so on this date in Super Bowl history, we do it at this time every day, is to celebrate the greatest game ever. On this date in 1983, the Washington Redskins beat the Miami Dolphins in Super Bowl 17. That was at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena. Now, I want to point out something. If you were to see the dates of all the Super Bowls around that time, before that time in the 70s and in the early 80s, you would find dates like January 12th, January 14th, January 18th, January 9th, January 15th, right? Like they were hovering around the first two weeks of the month of January, maybe the first three if you were kind of pushing it just a little bit. And then here came Super Bowl 17 in 1983. And it was on January 30th. That was, at that time, the latest the Super Bowl had ever been played. And you have to go into your NFL record books and history books to find out why. Why was that? Because the NFL went on strike in 1982, in the fall of 1982. And they played an abbreviated season. And then they had a different playoff structure. So a lot of stuff was pushed because of the strike. And so this was the latest that they played the Super Bowl. And the Redskins won. This was the famous John Riggins run, where he ran over Miami's defense for a 44-yard touchdown en route to a 27-17 victory over the Dolphins, who had not yet had Dan Marino yet. Dave Woodley was the starting quarterback for the Dolphins in that game. Still a Don Shula. Marino would come later. Also on the 30th of January was the Dallas Cowboys in their second win against the Buffalo Bills. This was the rematch at the Georgia Dome, and it's not as memorable as the first time they beat Buffalo, because I think that game in Pasadena that you were there at when you were a youngster was filled with more memorable moments. Don Beebe, of course, but just the utter annihilation of what Dallas did to the Bills in that game, right? The 9 turnovers they caused on Buffalo, Dallas winning its championship, Troy Aikman puking up before the game because he was so nervous, but then played brilliant. But what they did to the Buffalo Bills. But I think Don Beebe's play on Leon Lett was one of the more memorable moments. The game in Atlanta on this date in Super Bowl, this would be Super Bowl 28, was It was really Emmitt Smith's Super Bowl. The Cowboys gave the Buffalo Bills in that game a very big, heavy dose of Emmitt Smith, and he just kept pounding and pounding and pounding. And I think the Cowboys kind of escaped at the end a little bit, like pushed it. Like the final score was 30-13, but I think it was one of those Super Bowls where they padded a little bit of points at the end just to make the game, this final score, seemed a little bigger than it actually was. It was Buffalo's fourth straight Super Bowl loss. And I'll be honest with you, I can't imagine, and I have friends who are Bills fans, I can't imagine what that must have been like after the fourth one. First one, I get it. The Giants played great defensively, ran the ball well, controlled the clock. They missed a field goal in the final seconds. Okay, fine. Second one, all right, a little different, right? It's Mark Rippon and the Redskins, a very, very good team, going up against Buffalo, who, you know, Thurman Thomas forgot his helmet, et cetera. I get it. By the third one, you're thinking, we've got this. Like, we may be playing a Cowboys team that's got really great, talented people, but we have got this. And not only do they not have that, they get annihilated in the Super Bowl. But by the fourth one, nobody in America wanted to see them there. Everyone was getting sick and tired of it. You want to talk about an era of time where people were begging anybody but Buffalo? Please. It was then. And you would think, all right, you know what? We've got to put together a plan. We've got to do this. They didn't. They failed. But the fan base was still with them every single step of the way. It did not matter. And they would never go to the Super Bowl again. And that would be it. Back on January 30th, 1994. All right. You know what else happened on January 30th? That happened in 2000. For those of us, for my friends here in Nashville that are big Tennessee Titans fan, that was a Super Bowl 34, in which the St. Louis Rams beat the Tennessee Titans 23-16. It put the exclamation point on Kurt Warner, right? That season where nobody knew who he was, all of a sudden this Arena League bag packing quarterback, grocery store bagger, was now an NFL superstar. He had not only won the Super Bowl, but he did it putting up incredible numbers in that year. They would do better later on, but he was, that Rams team caught everybody by surprise. And I remember the start of the 99 season, and I remember when they lost Trent Green, and I remember thinking, this stinks about this league sometimes. You have high hopes, you have a high belief in yourself, like you've got a team to put together, you've got your quarterback, everything's going to work out great, and then you have to go to a backup nobody knows about, and he's got to be the quarterback for the whole season, and now you feel like your year is gone. Well, Kurt Warner changed that narrative a little bit. You know, obviously Tom Brady was the one that really took it to the next level by having an incredible Super Bowl run career. But the Rams got two Super Bowl appearances out of Kurt Warner's career, and he got three in totality, leading Arizona to a Super Bowl. Right? Kurt Warner goes from nobody to stardom because of this game and this ability to get him there. I'll give you an example of how important Kurt Warner became. When the XFL was formulating around this time, right? It was right after Kurt Warner had won the Super Bowl, and the XFL was going to kick off later on that winter in 2001. So it was like another full year. I was in Vegas, and a friend of mine said, hey, do you want to go to the Vince McMahon press conference? He's announcing the XFL here in Vegas. And I said, of course, any chance I could see Vince McMahon? Of course I will. And we got to the press conference, and Vince was pretty intimidating. I mean, he's very, we're bringing back smash mouth football. But the one thing he said was, the guy we're looking for in our league is a guy like Kurt Warner, a guy that will come out of nowhere and be a star. And a friend of mine, she was so smart with this question. She said, but isn't Kurt Warner a star because he plays in the NFL and won the Super Bowl? And he, McMahon, you know, obviously kind of danced around the question a little bit, but it sort of reminded me that, yeah, as much as you want that Kurt Warner story, this kind of rags to riches story, it was made rags to riches because the NFL offered the ultimate riches for you to take. Right? It's like a kingdom. You go get the kingdom, and then your story is complete. It's not really generating anything. It's not going from, I created a company and became rags to riches. It's, I took over a company, and that's how I got rags to riches. And that's what Kurt Warner did. By on the biggest game, in the biggest stage, in the biggest sport in the country, he shined the brightest on this date. Now, Kevin Dyson, 1 yard away, man, 1 yard away from potentially tying the game. But that's the game that went down on this date in 2000. Three Super Bowls in the memory books. The good, the bad, and the dumb. And that's coming up next on SB Nation AM.
SB Nation AM continues now on SB Nation Radio. Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, it is the good, the bad, and the dumb for a throwback Thursday. We're hitting you with all sorts of angles today. So here we go. What is the good of the day, my friend?
You know, the good of the day. You know, we've been seeing a lot of Kobe Bryant tributes, and we didn't really talk about NBA and TNT the other night.
Yeah, we did not.
It was, I think they were scheduled to cover the Lakers-Clippers game.
That's right. They were.
That's why they were there. But since that game was postponed, they decided just to hold a sit-down and just invited a bunch of people. One highlight I wanted to bring out, I'm not going to play the video clip because it's too devastating to listen to, was Jerry West. And Jerry West told the story that I never really knew, that in 2004, he had two conversations with Kobe Bryant and talked him out of signing with the Clippers. Now, I guess he had already had a deal, Kobe Bryant had a deal in place with the Clippers.
Right, yeah.
And he talked him out of it. And it just got me thinking, like, what, you know, just start playing that what if game.
Oh, no kidding, yeah.
You know, what if Kobe had gone to the Clippers? I mean, that's mutiny in L.A., by the way.
No kidding. No kidding.
But just the fact that, you know, I mean, that could that be Jerry West's greatest accomplishment?
Yeah. And yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, you know, Donald Sterling was still the owner.
Yes.
I mean, Kobe would have been playing for the worst owner in the NBA.
History.
In all of sports.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, man, good. That's a good story.
I mean, it was fascinating to think about, and then I was reading up a little bit on it more, you know, just people writing pieces about it, and I was like, God, this is extremely, it's like a turning point in the NBA.
Yeah, right.
I mean, had he decided, like, you know, I'm just going to go chase the money, and I'm going to sign with the Clippers, I can't even imagine where the Clippers might have been, what that would have done to Kobe's career.
Sure. And if you have a guy that you really, really respect, like a titan in whatever industry you're in, and they give you, you know, career and life job advice, you may not take it, but you definitely think about it, right? And I wonder how dedicated Kobe was to the decision and how much he went, wait a minute, hold on, switch it around. Maybe he was 30% going and Jerry West made it zero. Or maybe he was 70% going and Jerry West made it zero.
Well, apparently there was a deal in place.
Yeah, so, like so he was pretty committed.
A handshake.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Jerry West, who, you know, obviously, you know, was the one who drafted him to the Lakers or made the trade to acquire him from the Hornets. Also spoke about how he was a father figure to him because for the first 2 years, I mean, when Kobe first came to L.A., he was 17.
Yeah, that's right.
He said he didn't have a car, so Jerry's son used to drive him to and from practices. And he, I think he stayed with Jerry for a while.
Was West still a Laker executive at the time he was doing that, or was he just he was out?
He was out at that time.
Yeah, at the time and just still
so
said,
no
listen,
tampering.
Man. No tampering, right? But still, and still, that's a great story. That is a good.
I thought it was fun. I, you know, just wanted to highlight that one. The rest, it's worth a watch.
It totally is.
The NBA TNT, just hearing all the different stories about Kobe's competitiveness. Another one I was showing my son yesterday was when Derek Fisher and Dwayne Wade were talking about Kobe's competitiveness.
Right.
And how there was a game in Miami, and Dwayne Wade kept hitting Kobe's elbow. And the ref wasn't calling it, and it disrupted Kobe, and the Lakers ended up losing. Kobe, I guess, was so mad that he grabbed one of the trainers after the game and went down to the court in Miami and started and just had the trainer just said, keep hitting me on my forearm. I'm going to make this basket. I'm going to figure out how to make it. And I guess he was there till like 2, 3 in the morning.
Wow.
And Dwayne Wade saw it, he and somebody else, they were already dressed, ready to go out for the night. They grabbed somebody else. Said, you know, Kobe can't do this on our court. So they went and they started practicing and then bailed, and Kobe was still out there doing it until he's like, you know what? That might happen to me again. I'm going to make sure it never happens to me again.
What? How amazing. By the way, real quick, Peter King told a story on PTI how Kobe met the Chargers when they moved to Los Angeles, and somebody asked him what his favorite book was, and he said Jonathan Livingston Seagull. And he's talked about, he basically used the theme of that book to say, hey guys, you're in the NFL now and it's great. You know what? You have a choice. you can, you know, play out your career, play your 2 or 3 years, 3 or 4 years, however long you get your pension and call it a life. Or you can be you can now take this step of being among the elite of the best and now pursue to be the best. You know, now that you have this opportunity to be, you know, and then Peter King said almost half the team bought Jonathan Livingston Seagull.
That's crazy.
Right after Kobe brought that up and used the theme of that book to just feel that. So, man, it's the stories that are coming out are just really amazing.
Yeah,
just really
amazing. It's always a shame, though, that we start to hear these stories
afterward.
The fact.
You're right. You're so right.
It's always the bummer.
Right. All right, the bad of the day.
The bad of the day is PETA. Might be responsible for Skynet.
PETA now is responsible for Skynet. We've got a lot of Skynet culprits here.
I always, because one day it's coming. And I'm always trying to figure out where who started it. So PETA, I'm saying PETA might do it because they wrote to Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania.
What'd they do?
And just so everyone knows, if you don't know, Punxsutawney Phil is the groundhog that sees a shadow.
That's right.
Huge celebration. If you haven't checked out the movie, check out the movie. It's worth a watch. But Punxsutawney, they wrote to Punxsutawney suggesting they use a robotic groundhog. See? Skynet. See how I made the connection?
So why would PETA... Punxsutawney Phil doesn't get hurt in this process.
No, in fact,
it's not like they go, well, we actually have the groundhog. We name him Punxsutawney Phil, but there's a different groundhog every year because we eat the groundhog after he either doesn't or sees his shadow.
Right.
Then we put another groundhog in there, and we just call him Punxsutawney Phil. Then he comes out, sees his shadow. Then we grab him, and we eat him, and we have a town feast.
You never had anything till you had groundhog stew.
That's right. I mean, it's not like we're doing that.
No.
I think Punxsutawney Phil is like a celebrated animal.
Dude, that's got to be the fattest groundhog on the planet. Are you kidding me? He doesn't have to worry about predators. He's just sitting. He probably has a huge, I'm not even going to call it a cage. Just a huge house.
I keep forgetting this. I ask this every Groundhog's Day. If he sees his shadow six more weeks of winter?
Yeah, I think if he sees his shadow 6 more weeks of winter, he doesn't see his shadow.
Spring's coming?
How in God's name did that get started? Who knows?
What kind of voodoo witchcraft was that back in the day to determine whether or not you were going to get crops in to start planting crops in the spring? Like, when did we go down that road of using a groundhog in its shadow to determine weather? How great is that? That's on a Super Bowl Sunday, isn't it? Isn't it the 2nd of February?
Yep.
Yeah. We'll have a little Punxsutawney Phil action and then Super Bowl Sunday. Oh, I can't handle the excitement. Gosh, I should have gone to Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania one time in my life. I should see it.
Oh, that's still a bucket list.
It's got to be, right? Because I remember Groundhog Day, the movie, and I remember, like, that looks like a fun early morning festivity.
Looks like a great time.
Yeah.
And I bet you it's an all-day event.
The polka music? Bum, 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 bum,
bum, bum, bum, bum, bum. You got to stay in that bed and breakfast.
That's right. You got to.
You got to stay in that bed and breakfast and have your alarm clock radio.
It's cold outside.
Where it flips over.
Right.
But PETA is advising Punxsutawney to use a robot instead of a live groundhog.
Okay, well, a robot can't technically see its shadow unless it's got AI, and if it's got AI, it might as well just kill us instead of worrying about whether it can see its shadow or not.
Yep.
See, I'm worried about a robot groundhog that comes out. Do you see your shadow or not? No. Why? The humans. Well, get rid of the humans. Okay, there we go. Well, now we've got Skynet.
Yep.
All right? I mean,
it's just that simple, kids.
It's that simple. It's that easy. Program the AI to see its shadow. If it can't see its shadow, it's going to determine why.
If it came out and, you know, there's a building blocking the sun, it'll determine, well, that's man-made.
That's right.
That's human-made.
And that's got to go.
If humans did not make that, it's destroying, it's ruining my view of the sun. It's got to go.
That's right. It's got to go. And the people who built it, they also have to go. And that's how we get this.
Because they'll just build another one.
That's right. So true. Thank you, PETA. Thank you for that. I was having a good day until you brought, the robotic groundhog into my life. Thank you, PETA.
You know, PETA, Skynet, they kind of sound similar.
It's very similar. Very similar. All right, the dumb of the day.
The dumb of the day is Popeye's chicken.
What are they doing now?
All right, well, they had that sandwich that was all the rage.
That's right.
You remember that?
Love the sandwich.
You remember that thing? I bet you can go find one now.
Yeah, sure.
Right? But, I think they've been upset because they're not in the limelight anymore. So they released their own clothing line. And basically the clothing line is you can look like a Popeye's chicken employee.
So you can dress up as an employee. That because they think the sandwich is so popular, people want to dress up as people who make that sandwich.
Yeah,
that doesn't seem very a good business plan. When I was a kid, I liked Big Macs. I never wanted to dress up in the brown McDonald's uniform. I just kept eating Big Macs.
I mean, I'm looking at some of the photos here. You got the Popeye's uniform hooded jacket, Popeye's uniform crew neck t-shirt, the short sleeve polo, and a half zip up. So you too can just go online to their website and buy Popeye's chicken gear so you can look like a Popeye's employee.
Well, why would you want to do that when people are just going to come up to you and go, hey man, can I have a chicken sandwich? And you're like, I don't even know how they make it. I'm just such a fan of the sandwiches. I thought I'd look like somebody who did.
Yep. You're out of the park with your family, and then somebody comes up to you and says, hey, man, can I get a discount?
Yeah. Hey, man, can I?
Worse you're just yet, like, oh. What if you just happen to walk into a Popeye's chicken wearing a Popeye's polo? Somebody's going to come up to you and it's like, yeah, I haven't got my order yet. And
that's
they're gonna
right.
They're going to start hounding you for the order.
No. Yeah, you don't need that.
There's just
that
this, is. I don't. There's a lot of wrong things that can happen. Just, just keep the uniform. I never knew of a company that you can buy a uniform.
Listen, I don't either.
Quick story. There is a fast food restaurant. It's called Culver's.
Got it.
Right?
Now, right. I've been to, they got great burgers.
They got great burgers. And obviously, I went to one. I was like, you know what? For me, it makes sense to buy something.
Of course.
But I couldn't find anything. I could buy like a soccer ball that said Culver, but I was like, you know what? I want a soccer ball. I want a hat that says Culver's on it. They didn't have any available. And we was like, well, what about the one on your head? I want one of those. And they were like, well, no, these are for employees only. And I was like, oh, okay, I get it. And my buddy who was with me, he went there and says, listen, man, that guy's last name is Culver. We got to get him one of these hats. I mean, it was just a visor. And, he talked to the manager. The manager's like, all right, we got some in the back. So I was able to get a visor.
Cool.
That said Culver's. But that made sense for me. I would never go out. I would never go out because my name's not McDonald. Go out and get a McDonald's hat.
Yeah, no doubt. I would not either. I wouldn't want to dress up as an employee. If you want to give me maybe a shirt that says it, but that's it. But I'm not going to look like an employee.
Right.
That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous.
If Popeye is around and he wants to buy something that says, get some Popeye swag, makes all the sense in the world.
That's exactly right. All right, speaking of overeating, you're going to do it this weekend. And by the way, we found that there was like a map of the United States that said all the cool place, what the best Super Bowl snack was for each state.
Oh, yeah.
Did you? What is it? What is the Texas snack?
The Texas was chili.
Chili, of course. Why wouldn't it be?
No, which made sense to me.
Is there any place where pizza rolls is a thing?
No, but I hate to. I mean, I don't know if this is big in Tennessee, but the big one in Tennessee is jalapeno poppers.
Oh, see, no, I was hoping there would be some sort of barbecue slider or something.
Mississippi needs help.
What do they have?
Green beans and beef broth.
Okay, okay, maybe that's a good Super Bowl snack, I guess. How about
the worst was Wyoming though.
What do they have?
Ground beef.
That's it?
That's it.
Just ground beef? Ground beef with cheese?
That's
not ground
not
beef
a,
with
that's
chips?
That's not an entree.
No, you're not eating ground beef in a bowl. You don't just scoop ground beef and just eat it. You put it with cheese or you put it with salsa. You put it with something else.
Put sauce on it.
Exactly.
Get some hamburger helper for the love of Pete.
Never, it's crazy. But when you do overeat and you're going to get some stomach ache, you got to use Nausine. It's available in the digestive section of most leading retailers. Look, it's non-drowsy, no aspirin, no caffeine, no antihistamines. It's got no chalky medicinal flavor either. You get it in wild cherry. How great is that? Upset stomach nausea remedy, quick dissolving chewable tablets. And again, just take two or four of these, especially this weekend when you know you're going to have a lot of good stuff and you may not feel all that comfortable after you do so. So Nausine's four-minute formula quickly relieves stomach discomfort from overindulging. Again, available in the digestive section of most leading retailers, it's Nausine. That's the good.
You know who needs Nausine the most?
Who?
Looking at these states? Alaska.
Now, what do they have?
Alaska, you need to go out and buy cases of this because this has upset stomach written all over it. Dill pickle with beef dip.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it sounds tasty.
Right.
I'm not going to lie to you, but you definitely need to choke down some nuts.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. I think you do. Hey, does Hawaii, do they have any, is it any spam-oriented product?
Well, maybe. It just says nachos.
Nachos? Maybe spam nachos.
Yeah, you could probably throw some spam in there.
That's right. I got a can of spam from a race that I went to in early 90s. a NASCAR race because I think it was Lake Speed was the driver for the spam car, and they gave him away spam. I never took it out of the can. It's still sitting on like my collectibles desk, and I think if I opened it up, it would still be good, right? It's canned meat.
You should.
It should be
real quick.
Yeah,
because I don't know how well you know your neighbors to the north.
That would be Kentucky.
Kentucky. Yeah, their big go to is fondue.
I like fondue.
Is that really a Kentucky thing?
I don't know. No. I've never heard it. Fondue. I mean, like take a piece of meat and put it in oil fondue or chocolate fondue. I don't. Either one. Either one's good. All right. It's the good, the bad, and the dumb. It's SB Nation AM.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And again, 1971 Throwback Thursday, celebrating UCLA's win streak that started this state 49 years ago. This hour of SB Nation Radio, presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. This has been a good day of music.
I know, close but out it just hour. Makes me wonder... 2 weeks ago, we did 72,
yeah,
and it was terrible. What happened to that
dropped
year?
Off. Exactly. Maybe every good artist went, listen, I put out a record last year. I'm taking my time with a new album. You'll have something in 73, 74.
Yeah.
72, I'm taking, taking
now,
time
now
off.
Now we got to figure out, we got to do 73 and 74.
Right.
And see if that holds up.
That's right.
Or is it like a 2-year hiatus of decent music?
That's right. Well, we did celebrate today something that I don't think you'll ever see again. A college basketball team that won 88 straight games, or a men's college basketball team that won 88 straight games like UCLA did back in the day. I don't think you're going to see a team go unbeaten. I mean, good luck, San Diego State. I hope you pull it off, but that is really impossible to do. It's SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.